This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Thursday, March 11th. I'm Matt Hoisch. In today's headlines, Commissioner Waring hopeful for further reductions in COVID restrictions, Telluride Open Space Commission plans for restoration and trail building in 2021, new projects projected to reduce county carbon emissions by half, and a mountain weather forecast. But first, KOTO reflects the values of this unique community that celebrates civil liberties, nonconformist creativity, egalitarian social values, and the historic preservation of Telluride. But we can't do that without you. So please, make a donation during our winter fund drive to help us keep up that work by calling 970-728-4333 or going to koto.org. And thank you. San Miguel County Commissioner Lance Waring has good news when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Across the state and across the county, cases and hospitalization rates have continued to decline over the past few weeks.
Waring spoke on KOTO on Thursday. Vaccinations, he adds, have continued to increase. The state, he notes, estimates 22% of Coloradans are immune to COVID-19 because of vaccination or prior infection. Prior infection, Waring notes, confers immunity for about 3 months. Waring says he is hopeful that with continued low case numbers, the county could move further down the COVID dial into less restrictive level blue in the coming weeks. That hope, he says, is based on the numbers from the county COVID wastewater testing,
which continue to decline slowly, but continue to stay in the good zone, and those are often a predictor of 2 to 3 weeks in the future.
Still, Waring stresses people shouldn't let their guards down when it comes to COVID precautions.
And it's tempting. I would love to toss my mask in the trash and dance with my nose in the air, but I don't want to catch COVID in the home stretch. And we've been aware of this and working on this and trying to be good with this for a year. It seems really silly to blow it in the home stretch.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released guidelines for fully vaccinated people this week. They are allowed to meet with one another indoors without masking or distancing, and to do the same with unvaccinated people from one other household, as long as everyone in the other household is at low risk for severe disease. A person is considered fully vaccinated, according to the CDC, 2 weeks after receiving the last required dose of vaccine. But the CDC notes fully vaccinated people should continue to take COVID-19 precautions when in public, when visiting with unvaccinated people from multiple other households, and when around unvaccinated people who are at high risk of getting severely ill from the virus. As the COVID situation continues to improve, Waring urges the community to finish strong and finish smart. Easy access to pristine natural spaces is one of the main appeals of the Telluride region. For anyone in town, the Valley Floor and Bear Creek are a brief walk away. On Tuesday, Telluride Town Council unanimously approved the 2021 work plan for the town's Open Space Commission, which helps oversee the management and maintenance of both areas. Discussing the plan with council at their meeting this week, Town Program Director Lance McDonald began with a discussion of the commission's 2020 accomplishments, namely remediation of about 23 acres of mine tailings and river restoration on the valley floor.
That project was commenced in mid to late June and was completed in early October, which was about a month ahead of schedule.
McDonald says because the work was outside and spread out following COVID restrictions wasn't an issue. The roughly $3.4 million project was funded with a mix of money from the town and grants. According to McDonald, the remediation and restoration had been in the works for over 25 years. That work impacted the West End Trail, which runs along the valley floor, mainly on the north side of the river. One of the big capital projects on the property this year is to reestablish the trail. McDonald explains that will likely happen this summer.
And that's a pretty high priority project because this West End Trail serves as a relief valve to some extent for the river trail. It also is used by bikers quite extensively as a way for commuting if they do not want to ride the bike path. So it also melts out a lot quicker seasonally than the river trail. So it's actually a trail that's used quite a bit.
The Open Space Commission also plans to work on a new bike trail in Bear Creek. That trail would be west of and generally parallel to the existing Bear Creek Trail.
Extending from approximately where the Wasatch Trail intersects with the Bear Creek Trail, and then traveling northwards and then reconnecting to the Bear Creek Trail right at the corner where that wooden kiosk is above the town park.
The aim, McDonald says, is to reduce conflict between bikers coming downhill off the Wasatch Trail and pedestrians on the Bear Creek Trail. The commission has not yet determined whether hikers will also be allowed on the new trail or if it will only be for bikers. But McDonald leans toward the more restrictive option.
It probably will be closed, but we're not, you know, it hasn't been decided yet, but it probably would be closed to foot traffic as a way to encourage bikers to go on that trail.
McDonald notes it's the biggest trail town has considered since it acquired the Bear Creek property. The plan, he says, is for construction to happen late summer or early fall so the trail can be ready for use in summer 2022. The commission also aims to address the impacts at another area of Bear Creek that has seen increased visitation over the last few years, Little Hawaii.
And that's been due to social media, word of mouth, and local advertising. So basically, we're seeing a lot of environmental degradation, a lot of soil erosion in that area. It used to be basically a smaller, or it wasn't quite such a trip attractor, but now it certainly is.
The commission plans to document and close off some of the unofficial social trails in the area and de-emphasize Little Hawaii in social media and advertising.
Right now, the commission is concerned about the area and all. They wanted to make clear that all options for mitigation in this area should be on the table at this point.
According to McDonald, the Telluride Tourism Board has agreed to take the spot off their website, and the commission hopes to get lodging establishments to do the same. Right now, McDonald notes, the commission is trying to de-emphasize the site rather than draw attention with a large public closure. San Miguel County is taking a significant leap in its goal to become carbon neutral as soon as possible. By the end of this year, it aims to complete about $3 million in improvements to buildings that will reduce its carbon emissions by about 50%. That's according to John Bush, project team lead with the energy and infrastructure company Siemens, which is contracted with the county for the work. Bush spoke to the Board of County Commissioners about the project this week.
You guys have a realistic path to being carbon neutral. So that's really exciting. It's my understanding there's not currently another county in the state that is carbon neutral. So you guys are on track.
Planning for these improvements has been in the works since late 2019, with funding coming from the county and the state, as well as rebates from the San Miguel Power Association. The work spans a range of projects, including window replacements and lighting retrofits on county buildings, as well as solar installations on the Event Center, Deep Creek Garage, Ilium Sheriff's Office, and the back non-historic part of the county courthouse.
That's a really big win. We want to show that solar can go on historical buildings. There's some other folks around the state that are watching this. We're kind of eager to see how you guys have done it.
Another piece of the work at Deep Creek, the Glockson Building, and the Event Center is what's known as beneficial electrification. That involves replacing heating systems that run on fossil fuels with electric systems.
And then ideally, you power it with solar on the roof. Because if we're just buying, you know, grid electricity that's generated by fossil fuels, that's not really helpful either. So really the way you approach this to get heating done with renewable energy is through this paired electrified systems powered by solar.
The projects, Bush explains, will also have financial benefits, saving the county a little more than 40% in annual utility costs. That's about $45,000 a year. Resilience is also a goal. Newly installed battery backup will help ensure critical services can function during emergencies, a safeguard whose importance was highlighted, Bush notes, by the widespread power outages in Texas last month.
I think seeing what happened in Texas recently just elevates this to a level of importance that, you know, isn't always front of mind, but really should be.
Bush stresses this is not a comprehensive overhaul. There are other projects the county could undertake in the future to further reduce energy and fossil fuel use. On-the-ground implementation at the various sites will occur over the course of 2021, Bush explains. The Siemens team aims to complete the work by the end of the year. But even if county operations become carbon neutral in the coming years, the region will still have a ways to go. According to a 2018 greenhouse gas inventory of San Miguel and Ouray counties by EcoAction Partners, government energy use accounts for only a little over 1% of regional emissions. The two largest emitters, together producing about 45% of emissions in the counties, are residential and commercial buildings. Each month, the Wilkinson Public Library's Listening Club hosts a discussion about a different album. This Friday, Warren Gilbreth will lead the March Club about Tom Petty's Wildflowers.
You've got BC and AD, like there's Tom Petty pre-Wildflowers and post-Wildflowers, like they're almost two different careers. Growing up, my family was divorced and I never really knew it any other way. But the way that this album kind of sticks out to me is, you know, and in hindsight, Petty was going through a divorce when this album was being written. And I remember we were on the way to the airport, my mom, my brother, and myself. We were in our gold Suburban with a tape deck, and my mom stopped at the gas station and she let us buy two tapes each. And I bought Wildflowers and Pearl Jam's Vitalogy. This was somewhere in 94, like maybe December, maybe sometime around Christmas. So these records had just kind of come out. And in hindsight, like digging into this again, this record has always been a part of my life and takes me back to childhood and just random road trips and places along the way. But it's really interesting how these messages of hope and maybe you're sad or maybe you're depressed, but the cool thing about Tom Petty is at the end of it, there's always hope. And I don't know, I think just as a kid, like this record just really hit. You belong with your love on your own. You belong somewhere you feel free. What I like about Wildflowers is how simple it all is and how easy it is to comprehend. There's no double entendres. There's no real crazy deep lyrics to get into. It's all very simple. I tend to harp over nuances and things like that, whereas Petty was really in it for the simplicity and, like, you know, I really feel like he has the mindset of if it takes longer than 15 minutes to write a song, then there's really no point in it. I'm a perfectionist when it comes to some things, and I'm pretty lazy when it comes to others, but music is something that's real important to me, and it's just easy to get bogged down on the details, and should this have delay on it, or should I go to a minor nine, or should I do a fancy chord here? And I really think that good songwriters like Eddie Vedder, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, the list goes on and on. I feel like these people are like a conduit to another level where they can just pull these things out of the sky. And if you pay attention and you listen to yourself, a lot of times your first take or your first instinct is the best one. You never dreamed you'd go down on one knee, but now. Really, I think the big thing with Wildflowers was them changing from their previous drummer, Stan Lynch, to a guy, Steve Ferroni. And when you change a drummer, it's like a heart surgery, you know? Like, you're really changing the core of the band. And I think listening to a band like the Heartbreakers, who've been together for so long, all of a sudden be thrown into a studio situation with a new drummer and, like, that freshness, there's just a spark there. There's a creativity, and I feel like it really comes across on the album. You can tell that they're onto something. If I had to listen to one CD or one album on a desert island, I've always thought it would either be like some type of Allman Brothers jam, you know, something that's big and elaborate, or Tom Petty's Wildflowers and all the outtakes and live cuts and everything from the super deluxe edition that I've got on vinyl that I've just really enjoyed over the last couple months.
Rise and shine.
The March Listening Club will take place this Friday at 7 p.m. over Zoom. For more information, head to TellurideLibrary.org and click on the Events tab. Throughout the short film, Transcending, Aaron Parisi is training for a monumental goal, climbing the Seven Summits, the collection of the highest mountains on each continent. Parisi is a transgender woman who sees a connection between her personal journey and that physical journey.
There's a whole narrative that goes along with transition in the United States. You feel like you can be you, but you can't be seen and you can't be heard. Everything the Seven Summits stood for to me was bucking that stigma and saying that I could own my own narrative.
Transcending is one of several short films available to stream as part of the 2021 Women's Adventure Film Tour, presented by the Sherboneau Theater. Trisha Oakland, the theater's program director, says this is the third year the Sherboneau has shown the tour, which, she notes, always premieres on International Women's Day in March, which is Women's History Month. Oakland explains the films are a celebration of women, and it's one of her favorite tours they bring to the Sherboneau.
I'll say it, like, I'm a woman. I love seeing women doing really cool, new, adventurous things. I'm a really avid mountain biker, and most times I have at least one film with women out mountain biking doing really amazing things. It's inspiring. It's also great that it's in March. It kind of gets you really excited and jazzed for the season.
The 2021 lineup includes seven short films focused on a variety of tales, ranging from Connection, which is about eight women who rig a half-kilometer-long high line between two iconic rock towers in the Moab Desert, to Seabirds, about 25 women who swim in the ocean together every day.
Some of it, you know, is really huge endeavors. Some of it is smaller, just, you know, women, everyday women, getting out of that comfort zone, doing something they never thought they would do, doing it together as a team of women supporting each other.
Oakland adds, viewing the films is a way to support the theater.
You know, a portion of the proceeds do go to the Sherboneau Theater. We are a nonprofit here in Ridgeway, and we've been shuttered and dark since a year ago.
The 2021 Women's Adventure Film Tour is available to stream online at Sherboneau.org through Thursday, March 25th. Oakland has her fingers crossed the theater will be able to show the next tour live and in person at the Sherboneau in March 2022. Growing weed indoors produces more greenhouse gases in the Mountain West than in coastal regions of the U.S. That's according to a new study by researchers at Colorado State University. In a summary, the researchers explain electric grids in the Pacific and Atlantic coasts use cleaner energy, and milder coastal climates mean growers require less heating and air conditioning. In Colorado, the researchers note the weed industry accounts for 1.3% of the state's total annual emissions. But according to their research, the Mountain West doesn't have the most emissions associated with indoor cannabis growing. That title goes to Oahu in Hawaii, which they explain produces about 324 pounds of carbon dioxide equivalent per ounce of dried cannabis. That's roughly equivalent, they say, to burning 16 gallons of gasoline. Colorado lawmakers are preparing to debate a bill that would eventually prevent businesses from offering single-use plastic bags. KOTO's Scott Franz has more.
If you feel like you've already heard this story, you have. This is the third time in the last 2 years Democrats have attempted to ban plastic bags. The effort was derailed by the pandemic last year. Before that, a watered-down version was defeated by opponents who feared regulations around the state would be confusing. This time, Democrats have a larger majority in the state Senate, where previous efforts have been derailed. The latest bill would ban foam containers for takeout orders and allow cities and towns to enforce their own restrictions. Supporters say the changes would cut down on litter and benefit the environment. Opponents are worried about the cost to small businesses. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for scattered snow showers tonight with a low in the mid-teens. Friday, scattered snow showers mainly in the afternoon with a high in the mid-30s. And Friday night, snow showers with a low in the mid-teens. 1 to 3 inches of new snow accumulation is possible. Saturday, snow showers with a high near 30 and wind gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. And Saturday night, snow showers with a low in the mid-teens. This has been the news for Thursday, March 11th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who has donated to KOTO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to Mariah Myers, Mark and Terry Dollard, Joanna and Daniel Kanow, Jane and Gary Hickox, Marty Prohaska, Amy Bolt, Scott David, Caitlin Kettle, Claybrook Penn, Jessica McCauley, Katie and Andy Cox, Diane and Jess Wilson, John and Carlotta Horn, Callie Bilargian, Lynn Mullings, Lisa Renbord Lassiter, Sarah Spencer, Harvey and Gwen Morganson, Bill Kite, Palma Taverner, Sarah Tyler, Larry Goldman, Greg L. Craig, Shane Jordan, Matt Kuzmich, Rod Renborg, Chuck King, David and Sarah Calicott, Rachel Farnham, Don and Jane Berman, John M. Robinson, Shannon Campbell, Kathleen Cole, Grant Kennedy, and Lauren and Cammie Nichols. Thank you all so much.